You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast, the first of 2024. Happy New Year to everyone. Jason Ratliff here, joined by Jim Callis and Sam Dykstra. Jonathan Mayo starting this year in style, not with us, overseas in Italy. Jim, did you give him any scouting reports? I think he's kind of following in your footsteps there, right?
I think he went to a different area of Italy.
I thought you
than
both
I
went
did.
To Sicily.
We were in Sicily.
I think Jonathan's in Sicily.
Well, maybe he did. I gave him no advice. I was here if he needed it, but he did not ask for any, so I did not give him. Did not give him.
All right. Well, no advance scouting from Jim. So looking ahead to this year, 2024, we're going to talk about some of the debuts that we're excited to see. We'll take a look at so first, Jim, Jonathan, and Sam did a story where they identified a player per organization that they're excited to see debut in 2024. So you can check that out on MLB.com/pipeline. We're going to go through division by division, pick one of the more interesting guys from the division, and try to put an ETA when we can expect them. Because, you know, in the story, we're just saying we were excited to see these guys at some point in 2024. But I want to know, and I bet some of you out there want to know when specifically are we going to see these guys? So we'll dig into that a bit. We'll also take a look back, kind of, but we're kind of looking forward with this too, because we're going to talk about six teams whose farm systems improved the most in 2023. And that's kind of forward looking in that those teams are bound to be on the rise when we put out our farm system rankings here within the next month or so. Wow. And we'll wrap up by answering a question from the mailbag, which will pertain to the international signing period, which opens in less than 2 weeks from now, January 15th, as a, kind of a preview of that, but more of a review of last year's signing period. We're going to look at some players who signed last year, over the past year, and excelled in their pro debuts. All right. So, Sam, thanks for joining us here. And I've now seen you. I have a streak now. I've seen you every day this year, January 1st and 2nd. We'll see how long the streak goes. But yesterday I saw Sam plunging into the icy waters of the ocean in the Coney Island polar bear plunge. That was your
debut.
Yeah, that
makes
debut.
It sound like.
That was your debut, right?
No, I had done that before.
Oh, yeah. I
did that like 7 years ago or so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that makes it sound like I was the only one to do it. You also jumped in, Jason. You didn't just watch me do it. You also participated. You were right there alongside me, Coney Island.
That's true. Yeah. And
so is this going to be like the New York Marathon then, where the commissioner presents you, like there's a photo op of everybody who did the plunge?
Yeah, you should. Yeah. Like, and instead of your New York City Marathon medals, it's a polar bear pelt. Probably not. We probably shouldn't do that.
I'll graciously that'd be a great accept picture. If they're offering. You know, I'm available to take a polar bear pelt. Not a real one. Maybe a fake one.
Yeah, exactly.
For the polar bears out there. But
yeah.
I will accept anything for honoring our efforts yesterday.
Sam and I and...
Were there other MLB employees taking the plunge?
In fact, we were there with Benjamin Hill, who I'm sure many of our listeners know from the king of all things off the field in minor league baseball, and some things on the field. But yeah, he was there, and then thousands and thousands others. And I'm going to guess there were other folks from MLB there, but I'm not aware of any. Are you aware of any, Sam?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Yeah. But, you know, just the, like you said, the hundreds or maybe even thousands of people do that plunge every year. I'm sure somebody else was there.
Oh, sorry.
It's a very fun event. We'll have to have you come down for it next year, Jim.
Yeah, it's I was busy throwing out my back, so it wouldn't have been a good day to do the polar bear plunge. It would have made my back lock up more, and you guys would have had to drag me.
Wait a second, Jim. You're having aren't you having water heater trouble now. You could do your own polar bear plunge.
Yeah, it's been an eventful. It's been a mix of like extremes. So I threw out my back on New Year's Eve, just reaching down to pick something up. Our hot water heater went bad, so that's getting fixed right now. On the positive side, the fantasy football league I care the most about, I won the championship for the first time in 21 years, despite going 7-7 in the regular season. I set a record for playoff scoring, so that was exciting. My daughter's alma mater, I know, Sam, I guess wasn't as pleasant for you. Washington won a dramatic college football playoff game to go to the championship, and hopefully Matthew Leach isn't listening, but my alma mater smoked Matthew Leach's beloved Florida State 63-3 in an unwatchable Orange Bowl. So it's been a few days of highs and lows, like a lot going on here in suburban Chicago.
Well, back to the highs now. We're going to talk baseball. We're going to talk prospects that we're excited to see debut in 2024. Let's start in the AL East. And this is probably the one that most people are most excited about and probably also most curious to know when this one is going to happen. Jackson Holliday, baseball's number one prospect, the MLB pipeline hitting prospect of the year last year, minor league baseball hitting prospect of the year. We expect to see him in 2024. There's been talk about him potentially making the opening day roster. Jim, what do you think? Let's put a specific ETA on him, even beyond just, is he going to be on the opening day roster? Unless that's, in fact, your prediction, and then we have our date there.
You want me to tell what you time? What day opening day is?
What time he'll be at it?
Yeah. When will he get his first at bat? Like, I have to look at the schedule. You know, we've talked about this on the podcast in the past. I am probably a little bit more I could not be more bullish on Jackson Holliday's upside. Like in a rare correct prediction that we summarized in the last podcast, I predicted at the beginning of last year that Jackson Holliday would be the best prospect in baseball. Like, and I'll probably never get that prediction right again. But anyway, I'm Mr. Jackson Holliday. I'm on the bandwagon as much as anybody as a prospect. Unbelievable year. I don't think we've seen a guy in his first full season of professional baseball jump as far and as well as Jackson Holliday did since A-Rod, and A-Rod got to the big leagues. That said, you know, the Orioles are pretty loaded with middle infielders, and they have a bunch of options. They have, and none of these guys, I'm not claiming they're better than Jackson Holliday, but they have Jorge Mateo. They have Gunnar Henderson bouncing between short and third. They have Ramon Urias. They have Joey Ortiz, who's a really good defender. Jordan Westberg's got to play somewhere, perhaps. So that's what, I just rattled off five infielders for second, third, and short right there, not counting Jackson Holliday. I don't think he's going to make the opening day roster. He only played 18 games in AAA. They have other options. They're trying to win. I think it makes sense to let him spend some time in AAA. I think he could hold his own in the big leagues if he was on the opening day roster, but the Orioles have other options. They don't need him to hold his own. They're trying to win. I don't think he makes his debut on opening day. I know Sam's going to pick earlier rather than later, no matter what day I pick, but I'm going to say May 15th. I think he spends 6 weeks in AAA. I know you have the prospect incentive if he makes the opening day roster or gets full year service time and wins rookie of the year, they can get an extra pick like they did with Gunnar Henderson. But only one guy can win rookie of the year. That's kind of a long shot. And I think you're almost better served in his case if you have other options. He hasn't spent a lot of time. I'd rather push his free agency back a year and let him spend 6 weeks or so in AAA.
I mean, you called it, Jim. Jim already predicted my prediction, I guess, which is that I will be taking earlier. I honestly feel like he could make the opening day roster. Just because, you know, the Orioles know how talented he is. We've seen this the last few years with both Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. Those guys needed to find their footing in the major leagues before they really took off. Let him get those at-bats in March and April. Start him on the opening day roster if you believe he is your most talented shortstop. And, you know, like you listed off all those guys, they're all great options. We'll see if the O's make some moves between now and opening day to maybe clear out a little bit of that depth chart, make it easier for Jackson Holliday to start on opening day as they try to get better starting rotation help. But listen, you got the number one prospect in baseball. He looks close to being ready, even if it was just a handful of games at AAA. Throw him out there. Let him see the majors. Let him adjust. Let him take all the notes that he's gathered from his dad's time in the majors and put those to good use. I would take earlier. I could still see him maybe getting like 3 weeks in AAA, but if I had to pick an exact date, I would take opening day right now.
All right. Sam goes earlier. We're going to move down the top 100 list, but not very far, because the next guy we want to talk about, we're going to bounce from the AL East to the NL East, and that is Dylan Cruz, baseball's number 4 overall prospect. Sam, your prediction as to when we see him with the Nats?
Yeah, this might seem like a little bit of a flip-flop based off what I just said about Jackson Holliday, but I do think these are two different cases here. Because I think Dylan Cruz is talented enough to play in the major leagues right now. But unlike Jackson Holliday, he doesn't have a full season of the minor leagues just yet. Obviously tore the cover off the ball last year at LSU, Golden Spikes winner, number 2 overall pick, arguably the best hitter in that draft right there with Wyatt Langford, who was a better hitter in the minor leagues, and we'll talk about him later. Dylan Cruz kind of hit a wall at AA at the end of the year. That's a little bit to be expected given how much he was playing for LSU in the spring all the way to the national title game. If I'm looking at the Nationals right now, there are some clear lanes for him to get playing time, whether it's in a corner, whether it's in center field for the Nats. They don't have a particularly strong outfield unit right now, but I just think he needs that exposure to AAA for just a little bit of time. I would put his debut, and I do have the Nats schedule up right now, actually. They play the Dodgers April 23rd. They start a 3-game set at home against the Dodgers on April 23rd. I'm going to take that game.
There you go.
Well, I'm gonna be Mr. Conservative here. I don't think he's going to be up nearly that quickly. Love Dylan Cruz. Small sample sizes, so I'm not going to read too much in his pro debut. But for a guy, you know, who's known for controlling the strike zone and making contact, struck out at 26% clip, almost 3 times as much as he walked. Didn't really hit in AA in 20 games. The Nationals aren't going to be good this year. There's no incentive for you promote him April 23rd. I don't think that's enough for him to get a full year of service time. So that's not going to help you get a draft pick if you were to win Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's up before I think he spends at least 3 months in the minor leagues. I do think he'll get there quickly. But I do think he needs time to get acclimated, and there's absolutely no rush. You're not going to have him up early enough to try to get the prospect pick, and the Nationals aren't playing for anything. So even if he's your best right fielder, maybe they'll try him in center. Who knows? I don't see the incentive for pushing him. So I feel like we may have a theme here. I feel like NL Central, we're probably going to be in lockstep agreement, but I feel like I'm going to probably be more conservative than you in most of these.
I think that's probably the precedent we're setting here early, and that's the way. But we'll see. We'll see. We have 4 more divisions to go.
Let's see. Let's move on to the AL Central.
It's going to continue with this one. It's going to continue with this one. I'm telling you right now.
Well, this one we want to talk about Colson Montgomery of the White Sox, who Jim has only played 37 games at AA, which I'm guessing you will use to bolster your viewpoint here and your more conservative viewpoint. They lost Manderson, seemingly opening up an avenue for him, but then brought in Paul DeJong. When do you see Colson Montgomery joining the White Sox?
I'm going to say after the Futures game, because again, the White Sox aren't going to be contending. There's no reason to push him quicker than you need to. He's actually played, Jason, you forgot about Project Birmingham in 2022.
Oh,
so he's played 51 games in AA. But, you know, he hasn't had, you know, he was hurt last year. He had some back and oblique issues. Came back in the fall league where Sam and I both saw him. It's weird, Jay. I was going to say you saw him, but you were out in the fall league 2 years ago, not this year. He played well in the fall. He played much better in the Fall Stars game. He didn't tear it up during the regular season. Hitters league. So he really hasn't played that much above high A. He really hasn't played that many games as a professional. He only played 64 games last year. They only brought in Paul DeJong. They brought in Nicky Lopez. They traded for Braden Shoemake. And I think this is one where it wouldn't behoove them. they should push his free. I hate talking like this, but it is a business decision. They should push his free agency and arbitration eligibility down the road. There's no point in setting the clock ticking on those earlier than you need to. So I'm going to say, like, I personally, I would start him in Double A for at least the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season, then promote him to Triple A. But I think it's going to be after the Futures game. I say he plays in the Futures game and then they promote him to Chicago.
This might be an upset here. I'm going to take later.
Wow. Did not see that coming.
Not because I don't like Colson Montgomery, but actually because I agree with what a lot of what you're saying there, Jim, about, you know, he hasn't seen Double A a heck of a lot yet. He doesn't really have that strong base of success at that level to be like, okay, he's a clear candidate to move like in 3 weeks if he hits the ball really well in the Southern League. I like him a lot, and I think Chicago, you know, will want to show off the shiny new guy as quickly as they can. I could just see this going away kind of like Gunnar Henderson, not this year, but 2 years ago. You bring him up in September, you let him see the major leagues, you let him get acclimated, but he maintains his rookie status going into 2025, where he could very well be the rookie of the year favorite in the American League and can really lead that revival that they're hoping to have on the South side. So I'm just going very later calm for that purpose. Like, I just think they might be in a position where they want to preserve his prospect status. He could easily be slugging like 600 come the All-Star game and the Futures game and get called up quickly. But for the purposes of this game, I'll say later.
I think Jim might be trying to get you on a technicality. He very loosely worded his prediction. He just said after the Futures game, which it's kind of difficult to pick later.
No, I meant like right after. Right, okay. He's going to play right in the Futures game.
I know.
And then they're going to call him up right after that.
I thought you were trying to say Sam.
I only tried to pull the fast ones on John. Sam, like, with little prep, agreed to join us on the podcast. So I'm not looking to pull any of the shenanigans I would pull on Jonathan.
Good.
So that's no intent there.
Okay. NL Central, Sam, Jackson Chourio, this one probably largely influenced by the big contract signed over the winter meetings, which certainly has kind of changed the pace at which we might see him. Do you think, is it a guarantee that we see him on opening day?
I wouldn't say anything is guaranteed, but again, for the purposes of this game, I will be taking March 28th at the Mets. That is where the Milwaukee Brewers will be opening the season at Citi Field, and that's what I think. You know, that contract was a clear sign that they're a fan of the player. It's a long-term play. They've said he's going into spring training, competing for a job. It's not necessarily given just because they signed him to a long-term deal. But I think it is a clear sign of, hey, we don't just think of you as the future. We think of you as the present. And I know they are loaded with guys who can play center field between Sal Frelick and Garrett Mitchell, who's coming back off injury. And Joey Weimer didn't have the rookie year that I think a lot of people wanted out of him, but he showed he can play a really strong defensive center field. But Jackson Chourio has a higher ceiling than any of those guys. He has more power than Frelick. He has a better hit tool than Mitchell. He's just as fast as some of those guys. He can really push the envelope, you know, in terms of running the bases. Was a 20-40 guy last year as an age 19 player. I think all the pieces are there for the Brewers to start him on opening day, and they back that up. They back that confidence up with a lot of money and a lot of years on that contract.
Jim, I want to see you take
earlier or later.
I want to see you take earlier than opening day.
I think they're going to move the season up. They're going to move the season up. I'm going March 27th. Now I'm just going to concur, but I'm going to go off script slightly because Jackson Chourio, number two on our list. The NL Central also has number three on our list, Paul Skenes. Sam, I guess I am pulling shenanigans on you now. Unscripted.
Unscripted.
When's Paul Skenes going to debut? When do you think Paul Skenes? Because Chourio, I think, is a layup for both of us. When do you think Paul Skenes is going
to
debut?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see both the Nats and the Rangers get really aggressive with the other two big college names from last year's draft with Langford and Cruz. Skenes pitching is just such a different animal. You know, he's only going to be pitching maybe once a week, and he's going to need those reps maybe at Indianapolis. I am going to go late May, May 22nd.
Ooh, that's like, I'm actually going to go. That's like almost perfect. Like, I was going to go, if it was me, I was going to say May 15th. So I guess I will go slightly earlier. I'm going to go slightly earlier. just because I agree with you, Sam, the pitchers are different. And with the pitchers, it's like, if your stuff's going to play, it's going to play. And I think he's just going to go out and tear up the minors, and they'll call him. Like, they, shoot, that division could be winnable this year too. They've got some interesting young talent in Pittsburgh. So I'm going to say 5 to 7 days slightly earlier on Paul Skenes.
All right. Bonus player there. All right. Let's get to the American League West and Wyatt Langford of the Rangers. Here's a guy who we, even last year, in his draft year, we heard some chatter about the possibility of him getting called up for the postseason run. Didn't happen, but he certainly, looked like he could potentially help down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, they were never serious. I mean, there was speculation when Garcia got hurt, Adolis Garcia got hurt late in the postseason, that they might add him to the roster, which would have been insane. And while I said earlier, I don't really care about debut stats too much, because like Sam pointed out with Dylan Cruz, why Langford's in the same situation. They both went to College World Series finals. They were both exhausted. They had a layoff, and they come to pro ball. It's small sample sizes, so you don't really read too much in the debuts. But that said, in 44 games, including a 5-game stint in AAA, Wyatt Langford hit .360 with a .480 on base, .677 slugging, 10 homers and 12 steals in 44 games. And, you know, we have the top 100 list coming out, and I still go back and forth, as much as I love Evan Carter. Who's the best outfield pro? Who's the best prospect in the Rangers system? Is it Evan Carter, who we've already seen what he can do and he won a World Series? Or is it Wyatt Langford, who's got a higher ceiling? You know, Langford's in a little bit different situation than almost all these other guys we're talking about. I mean, I guess the Orioles had a very good season last year too, but it's defending World Series champions. They don't really have an opening in the outfield per se. I mean, Leody Taveras plays great defense up the middle. You know, Adolis Garcia's, you know, Evan Carter are in the heart of the lineup, so they don't really have an outfield spot. All that said, I just think Wyatt Langford is so ridiculously good that, you know, he'll force his way into lineup. I mean, there'll be at-bats at DH. There could be injuries. So if they weren't as good a team, I would almost pick earlier. But I'm going to say June 8th. I think he's just going to tear it up, and they're going to be like, even though our lineup's really good, we need to add this guy to our lineup. So I'm going to say June 8th, even though they're defending World Series champions and have no holes in the outfield.
Yeah, well, now I'm going to go back to my script, and I'm going to take earlier on Wyatt Langford. I do think there's a real chance he's competing for a job this spring, because the Rangers, you know, they want to hit the ground running. They want the best team out there. And Bruce Bochy even talked about this at the winter meetings on MLB Network. He was asked about Wyatt Langford, and he said, you know, he's special every step of the way. He just kept putting up those numbers. He'll come into spring training. We're going to stay open-minded. It's going to be competitive. He'll have a chance to make the club. It's all performance-based. I don't care how old they are. CY, Chris Young doesn't care. If we think they're ready, then they'll be on the team. If Wyatt Langford does what he did at the tail end of last year, and if he did, you know, what he did at Florida. I know Leody Taveras, like Jim said, is strong defensively up the middle, was almost a league average bat. But if you put Evan Carter in center and Wyatt Langford in left, and then you have Garcia in right, that's one of the strongest outfields in baseball, even if Wyatt Langford needs a little bit of time to adjust, which he's shown he hasn't needed so far in pro ball. So I think they come out firing and try to put their best team out there. I'm going earlier than June.
Who do you like long-term? Better, who's gonna have the better career, Wyatt Langford or Evan?
Oh man, we're gonna have this out later too, because we're gonna have to talk about our top 100. I have Langford being better. The guy just hits the ball really, really hard. He's shown a selective process at the plate as well. He makes good swing decisions. He's not gonna be playing up the middle like Carter, but I just like the impact of the bat a little bit more than Carter, who I love as a player too. He's really, you know, as he showed, it's a hitting process that carries really well level to level, no matter how old he is. But I just think Wyatt Langford hits the ball so hard that he's going to be the better player overall.
I know. I'm still conflicted on that. And the crazy thing is Evan Carter is 9 months younger than Wyatt Langford.
And has a ring. Like, that's the thing that keeps,
hey, wait,
keeps
he doesn't back. Just have a ring. It's not like, hey, he happened to be up for 3 days, so he gets a ring. He was a big part of the reason they won that ring. It's like, it's insane. But we should move on, because I could talk about Evan Carter for
don't
half
get
an hour,
started.
As I've done on many
2024
podcasts.
Is just like 2023. All of them.
Yes, yes.
All right, let's move to the NL West, and our player we want to spotlight here, Padre shortstop Jackson Merrill, top 10 overall prospect in baseball at the end of the 2023 season. When do you see him making his debut?
Yeah, I think this is going to be kind of like what I said earlier with Colson Montgomery, which is going to leave a large gap for Jim to choose here. Jackson Merrill last year maybe didn't necessarily have the year I would have loved to have seen him have. I mean, coming out of spring last year, it seemed like they were prepared to get super aggressive with him. He started the year out at High A Fort Wayne, needed a little bit of time to adjust. You know, it was his age 20 season, so he was still relatively young for that. Moved to Double A San Antonio by the middle of the year, hit above 270 at both spots, was showing pretty good strikeout to walk ratios, wasn't striking out a ton. If you look at where he is going into this year, he's going to probably start out the year at Double A, but I think the hit tool is strong enough that he could pick up again, make those adjustments, move out of Double A by the middle of the season, get to Triple A El Paso. And I think if the Padres rebound in a way that I believe they're capable of doing, they're going to want some help, coming off the bench. And Jackson Merrill can certainly provide that. So I'm going to go again with a September debut for Jackson Merrill. We'll say September 1st. You know, the rosters expand just a little bit. He'll be one of those roster expansions. They'll want his left-handed bat coming off the bench. Will he push Xander Bogaerts off short? Maybe that's a discussion they have going into 2025. But I think he's just going to be a little extra boost for San Diego's, hopefully, postseason chances for their sake. That they can rebound in a way that I believe they're capable of doing. But I don't see Jackson Merrill necessarily coming up in the first half by any means. The NL West was one of the tougher divisions to pick an exciting debutant because I think Merrill's kind of pushing it, but I'll give him September.
All right, Jim?
This one's an easier one for me. I'm going to say earlier. I think they are going to contend. They have enough talent on that team. They should have been better than they were last year. I think they will be better in 2024. I'm looking at roster resource right now. Matthew Batten is their projected starter at third base. They could shift guys around. I think they're going to contend. I think he's going to be one of their best infield options by the middle of the summer. So I'm going to say earlier. I feel that was an easy pick for me. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's up at some point in July.
All right. There you go. There's predicted ETA for one of the most intriguing potential 2024 debuts in each division. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss the six farm systems that improved the most in 2023. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast, first of 2024. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Sam Dykstra, sitting in for the absent Jonathan Mayo. Hey, this works out great because Sam wrote a story on the six farm systems that improved most in 2023, and that's exactly what we want to talk about right now. The way that they broke down is a couple of them are sort of are within the top five farm systems or were in our midseason rank, and you know, things have happened since then, but the Brewers and Cubs ranked number 3 and 4. And then three of the teams on this list are more sort of mid-tier or were at the mid-season re-rank. The Padres, number 9, Mets, number 11, and Tigers, number 13. And then there are the White Sox, who were down at number 20, but have made a pretty sizable leap. So, Sam, why don't you start off at the top there?
Yeah, the Milwaukee Brewers, you know, I think were the breakout system of the 2023 season. I wrote that when we did our midseason rankings, farm system rankings update. And then as we sit here now in the offseason, I think that still holds up. That's still true. You look at Jackson Chourio obviously solidifying himself as one of the top two prospects in baseball with the 2040 season that we talked about earlier. But it's funny looking back that Jefferson Caro, Jacob Mizorowski, Tyler Black, those guys weren't top 100 prospects at the beginning of last year. they all had some question marks about them. Caro had some injuries. Tyler Black had some injuries. Mr. Rowski, really special stuff. How is it going to play in the minors? And every single one of those guys checked off the boxes that they need to not only just become top 100 talents, but to leap into the upper half of the rankings. Caro is one of the best defensive catchers in the minor leagues and showed that the bat could play. Mr. Rowski, this stuff was incredible, was my MVP at the Futures game last year with the way his breaking stuff was working, and the heater was hitting the upper 90s, touching triple digits. Tyler Black, one of the best approaches in minor league baseball, and showed that he can steal bases in the modern game. And then you look at some other breakouts. Robert Gasser, Carlos F. Rodriguez were really good at the upper levels as pitchers. Luis Lara went the Jackson Chourio route, skipped over the ACL completely, moved to single-A Carolina. And then their draft was, I think, pretty strong for where they were. Brock Wilkin, taking him at 18th overall. He brings some really, real big power to that system. And I know Jim loved Cooper Pratt when they took him in the sixth round and signed him for $1.35 million. So there's more coming. Chourio might graduate pretty quickly in 2024, like we talked about earlier, but the pipeline continues to move for the Brewers. And that's why we moved them up to number three when we did our rankings, which was a pretty big jump considering they started the year at 15.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Sam. I thought they were the most improved farm system over the course of the year. The NL Central has a lot of really good farm systems. That probably, we haven't broken it down this way, is the strongest division of farm systems if we were evaluating it that way. We had the Cubs four in our midseason ranking, and they were, you know, 10th in midseason 2022, 12th going into last season. So they we knew they were a system on the rise, and I still think they improved. They had a nice year where almost all of their best prospects had a positive step forward. Pete Crow Armstrong, his brief big league debut notwithstanding, played well in Double-A and Triple-A, continued to assert himself as one of the best defenders in the minors. Just from a position side of things, Owen Casey established himself as one of the best power prospects in the minor leagues. Kevin Alcantara got off to a slow start, but rebounded and kind of regained his footing on the top 100 prospects list. They got Matt Shaw out of the draft with the 13th overall pick. I think Matt Shaw is going to shoot to the big leagues very, very quickly. Moises Ballesteros is a gifted young hitter. James Triantos, really, we saw him take a step forward in the Arizona Fall League. And then pitching, which has been kind of the Achilles heel of the Cubs development system till recent years, big step forward there too. He doesn't have the highest ceiling in the system, but Jordan Wicks pitched very well for the Cubs in Chicago down the stretch. Cade Horton, who's probably to pitchers what Evan Carter is to hitting prospects for me. Cade Horton was every bit as good as advertised and is going to probably make an impact this year. Ben Brown took some steps forward. He has pretty nasty stuff. I think Jackson Ferris is one of the best lefties in the minors. So it was just a year where almost all of the development stories were very positive. That's not even counting guys like Hayden McGeary, who established himself as a legit prospect, or a youngster like Jefferson Rojas going to low A at age 18. And I do think it's possible, we'll have to see how promotions play out, that those might be the top two farm systems in all of baseball by the end of 2024.
Yeah, three more that I wrote about real quick. The Padres, the Mets, and the Tigers. You know, we were talking about Brewers and Cubs being number three and number four. And like you said, Jim, they could be in the discussion for number one overall once the Orioles graduate a ton of guys. But the Padres, Mets, and Tigers kind of move themselves onto the cusp of the top 10 in different ways. The Padres, you know, a few years ago, people thought the Juan Soto deal was going to completely clear them out. And that hasn't been the case because of some nice developmental wins. Obviously, Ethan Salas being the big name there, being the breakout prospect of the year last year, going from a January 15th signee to ending the year at Double-A as a teenager. But I think the big thing for me for the Padres system last year was the 2022 draft class. Robbie Snelling and Dylan Lesko were really good talents coming out of that draft and looked really good. Robbie Snelling, you know, right there as one of the best statistical pitchers in minor league baseball last year. Dylan Lesko coming off Tommy John surgery. The changeup looked every bit of the 70 grade pitch that we had it coming out of the draft. But you look at guys like Graham Pauly, Jacob Marcy, Nathan Martorella. They weren't big names in the 2022 draft, and now they're on the tips of the tongues of many Padres fans of like, when can we get these guys to San Diego? So there were some developmental wins there for the Padres. For the Tigers, kind of similar. I think the big deal for them was just getting health. Colt Keith missed a lot of 2022 with injuries. Jackson Jobe missed the first half of the season with back problems. When he came back, he looked like a potential, maybe even number two starter with the way, you know, his slider is really, really good. And he added a cutter that was effective and the fastballs playing well. Cole Keith clubbed 27 home runs at a 932 OPS at AA and AAA. So that was a nice developmental win. And then they add Max Clark, one of the big five in the draft. We'll have to see how that looks in years to come. Maybe they got a little too cute by not taking Wyatt Langford and getting the savings, but still, Max Clark is a five-tool talent that you add to that system, and the Tigers certainly took a step forward. And the other one is the Mets, and I don't mean the Mets necessarily improved from where they were in March to where they are now. Back then, they had Francisco Alvarez. They had Brett Beatty. Those guys graduated, and it looked like they were in for a steep decline. Then they were aggressive sellers at the trade deadline and got to add some really good talents like Luis Angel Acuna, Drew Gilbert, Ryan Clifford. I really like the deal that brought them Marco Vargas from the Marlins. He's got a really special hit tool. I think he could be a breakout prospect in 2024. Also some strong steps forward in their pitching department. Christian Scott might be their best pitching prospect now. Mike Vassell is knocking on the door of Queens by the end of the year. And I think Blade Tidwell and Dominic Hamill have some really good stuff when it's on and when they have their command. So the Mets, where you thought they were in June was that they would be maybe a bottom 10 farm system. Now they're knocking on the door of the top 10. We'll see how they land. Maybe they will be in the top 10, but it's certainly a more dynamic and interesting farm system than where we thought they would be a few months ago.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way. You know, more dynamic and more interesting is a good way to describe the White Sox, who were the other team you mentioned in your story, Sam. And the interesting part about them, I think, is like, we ranked them 20th in midseason. So they're not an upper half of baseball farm system yet, but their depth was so low coming into the year. And then in July, between trades and the draft, they added a ton of guys. Like I was looking at our list, and I do our White Sox list. 10 of the top 19 prospects on our White Sox list were not in the organization in July. They made trades. They went out and traded for Edgar Caro and Jake Eater and Nick Destrini and Kai Bush. They added another pitcher this offseason who'll probably make their opening day rotation, and Shane Drohan, who was a Rule 5 pick from the Red Sox. And then with the draft, you know, they took Jacob Gonzalez in the first round. He didn't have a great debut, but they added Grant Taylor and Seth Keener, who two really interesting pitchers. They got George Walkow, who kind of slid in the draft for financial concerns and found a way to pay him late. And I do think anybody listening to this podcast in Chicago, where I live, and there's a lot of disgruntled White Sox fans right now, don't want to hear it. But like, I do think that a lot of things did not go well for the White Sox in 2023, but I do think they did add a significant amount of talent to a system that was not particularly deep coming into the year. And I'm not saying, oh, the White Sox are going to be contenders in 2025, but they needed to make trades. They needed to have a good draft, and they did that.
All right. Well, speaking of adding talent to systems, that's going to happen in mass in just a little under 2 weeks, as the 2024 international signing period will begin on January 15th. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss that. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Sam Dykstra. And now a question from Ed Casey. We're going to wrap up here with our mailbag. And Ed, whose Twitter handle is CaseyWSox, says, with the January 15th International Signing Day approaching, which players from last year's class had some of the most impressive debuts? Ethan Salas's meteoric climb through the Padres system excluded. All right, so takes away the easy answer for you guys. But there were some other players from last year's signing class that didn't quite have that same meteoric rise as Salas, who was the number one player, the number one international prospect in last year's class. There were a couple that reached high A, though. Salas, of course, got the double A. essentially unheard of for a 16-year-old signee in his pro debut. But the last year's top 50 list, you look at the top of it, and the guys at the very top in the top 10, by and large, I think all but one of them played last year. Number two, Felton Celestin, who the Mariners signed, did not play, I think had a hamstring injury. But everyone else in the top 10 did, and for the most part, played well. And if they didn't have particularly good numbers, they reached, in a couple of cases, high A. Jim, I know you're always very cautious about reading much into numbers and players' pro debuts once they sign international prospects, but you're not going to argue with guys playing well right out of the gate.
No, I mean, you know, the DSL is not a very high level of baseball, and strike throwing isn't great, so you can't read too much into like, oh, guy's drawn a lot of walks, that means like he's got a great eye, and the complex leagues too, but what you said is exactly correct. I don't put too much stock into it, but I do think that negative numbers are a red flag. So you obviously want your guys to play well. And as you noted, almost all the guys, you know, who were ranked at the top of Jesse Sanchez's international list performed well. Like one of the guys I want to talk to, you know, you mentioned, you know, guys getting a high A, Sebastian Walcott, and he only played four games there, but he tore up the Arizona Complex League, had an 849 ops while he was there. And it wasn't just even the stats. I mean, he had seven homers. He had nine steals in 35 games at that level at age 17. And a lot of your international guys, like some of the top guys, will come over to the U.S. I mean, that's him making his pro debut, his U.S. debut after nine games in the Dominican Summer League. Like, he came over almost immediately. But it wasn't just the numbers. It was the way in which he did it. I mean, he's producing exit velocities in excess of 110 miles an hour on a regular basis, which is crazy for a guy that young. His arm from shortstop, you know, you could put a plus-plus grade on the arm if you wanted. You know, he's a solid runner who's faster in terms of straight line speed. I mean, again, small sample size. You know, he struck out 64 times in 48 games, so we're going to have to watch that. But in terms of dynamic tools and then, you know, being able to perform at age 17 in the United States and even have enough to where you can, you know, hold your own for a few games in high A at the end of the year, I was really, really impressed with his debut in a summer where we had a lot of strong international debuts.
At 17 years old, 6'4", 190 pounds, out of the Bahamas. And the only other prospect from last year's international class that ranks in the top 100 prospects in baseball, the other, of course, being Ethan Salas. But Salas, number 5 overall. Walcott at number 62 and number 3 on the Rangers top 30. Sam, hit us with a guy you want to talk about here.
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to stay in that that top 10 area. I'm going to go with Alfredo Duneau, the Reds number 13 prospect right now. A catching prospect last year who actually didn't catch. He only DH'd in the DSL. While he was rehabbing an arm injury, they just didn't want to push things. You know, he was only 17 years old. He actually turns 18 on January 7th. So early happy birthday to him. But if he's not going to play defense, he was going to need to hit to catch our eye. He certainly did that, hitting .303 with a .451 OBP, .493 slugging. I know Jim said, and I agree with this, that you can't always trust walk numbers in the DSL because sometimes guys just don't know where the ball is going. But he did walk 38 times, only struck out 41 times in those 45 games. He's going to be power over hit, it seems like. And the power started to be there, 6 homers in those 45 games. So all the pieces are there. And even though we haven't seen him defensively quite yet, he's considered a plus defender with a really strong arm. So we could see him take off to a new level in 2024, once he comes stateside to the Arizona Complex League, once he's fully healthy again. All the pieces are there for him to be a lot more interesting as, you know, he starts to add defensive work to his game as well.
Duneau was number...
I'm going to sneak down the list. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Before you sneak down the list, Jim, Dunno was number 4 on the international top 50 prospects list heading into last year's signing period, signed for $3.1 million. All right, Jim, sneak down the list.
I was going to sneak down the list and go for a guy who Jesse Sanchez had number 15 on his list coming into the year, and that would be Rainer Arias of the Giants. He's a son of Pablo Arias, who reached AA in the Tigers system as a pitcher and now scouts for the Diamondbacks. And his son was one of the more physical players in the 2023 international class, got some comparisons to young Eloy Jimenez, signed for a little under $2.7 million, which was the second highest bonus in franchise history for an international player. And he only played 16 games in the DSL. He sprained a wrist diving for a ball, so he didn't get to play a whole lot. So it was only 58 at-bats. Anyway, okay, small sample size, Dominican Summer League. But if you're going to have a small sample size in Dominican Summer League, it's pretty impressive when you hit .414 with a .539 on-base percentage and .793 slugging percentage, more walks and strikeouts, 4 homers, 4 steals in 16 games. I actually moved him pretty significantly up the Giants prospect list. I have him at number 6 on their list at the end of the 2023 season, and the Giants are very excited about what this guy brings to the table offensively. He is going to be a corner guy in the long run. Could be right fielder. He has enough instincts and arm strength to handle right field. But this is a guy who in a couple of years could be one of the better hitting prospects in the minor leagues. They're very excited about the way he started his career.
All right, Sam, who do you want to talk about here?
Yeah, I'm actually going to sneak back up the list. And I'm going to go to the guy who was number 5 international prospect for us last year, and also is the number 5 prospect in the Oakland A's system at present. That's Luis Morales. He was the top pitcher on the international market last year, signed with the A's for $3 million. Sometimes, or most of the time, really, when we're talking about international signees for pitchers, they're extremely raw. It's going to take them a while to move. Morales isn't really that. He's already 21 years old. He turned 21 last September, coming out of Cuba, so is more polished than most of these guys. And the A's pushed him accordingly. He started out in the DSL, finished the year at High A Lansing. Across those 4 levels, had a 2.86 ERA, 53 strikeouts, only 15 walks, 109 whip, 202 batting average against. The control is clearly there. He knows where the ball is going, unlike many other international signees. He's got a fastball that he can throw up to 99 if he's really rearing back, an above-average slider. All 4 pitches right now grayed out as having at least average potential. So the pieces are there for him to be a decent starter. Now is when he starts to build on that. 44 innings, like I said, last year. You hope he can maybe get to 100 this year after starting out again in the Midwest League. That's going to be an interesting experience. Midwest League, it's going to be cold in April when he starts there. How is he going to be able to handle that? We'll see. But for everything you could have hoped for Luis Morales' first professional season stateside, he certainly checked all the boxes and becomes an interesting arm for an A system that needs as many interesting arms as they can get.
All right, and Jim, you're going to sneak a little bit farther up the list.
Yeah, I'm just following Sam's lead on this. Whichever way Sam moves, I go in the same direction. But yeah, number 3 on the list, on their national top prospect list going to last year, was Yoendry Vargas, shortstop from the Dominican Republic, who signed with the Dodgers for a little over $2 million. And really nice debut for him, too. He went to DSL, hit .328, had an OPS slightly over .950, 7 homers, 19 steals in 48 games. You could see tools. You could see instincts. Former switch hitter. He now hits only right-handed. Good swing, good approach, focuses on hitting line drives to all fields. He's 6'4". He's going to get stronger. He's got plenty of bat speed. So I think we're talking 25 home run power once he's physically mature. And though he's bigger than most shortstops, he does have good actions. He moves well to both sides. He's got a strong arm. I think there's a pretty good chance he can stay at short. And if for some reason he can't, I think when you project him physically and you look at the bat, then he would profile really well at third base too. So he gets overlooked maybe a little bit in the Dodgers system because it's one of the deeper systems out there. And I think it's a little harder for a guy making his debut fresh out of the international class to rise up the list. He's number 12 on that list, which is, I think, a pretty strong ranking in a very deep system.
All right. And Sam, a kid who's already been traded, just signed last year and already has changed organizations.
Yeah, which made for a fascinating look at him. It's Jeremy Rodriguez, who we just put onto the Mets list at number 30. He will be bumping up when we do our update here in a few months. But Jeremy Rodriguez, was one of the younger players in the DSL this year, only turned 17 on the 4th of July, and was moved from the D-backs to the Mets pretty quickly after that in the Tommy Pham deal. What I like about Jeremy Rodriguez is he doesn't swing and miss very much, at least for that level, and especially for his age. And that especially came through after the trade. You know, it was a very small sample. He only played 13 games for the Mets DSL affiliate. But in those 13 games, he walked 11 times, struck out only 4. Showed some good speed, too, with 7 steals. It's mostly gap power right now. All the reports we got on him when he first signed with the D-backs for $1.25 million, he was their biggest signing last year, was that power could come for him eventually. It's mostly to the gaps right now. It's going to take a while for that to develop, I think. But the fact that he's making some really interesting swing decisions, he is putting bat on ball, especially relative to his age. It's a strong start for Jeremy Rodriguez. Could play short, could play second base. We'll see how he ends up defensively. But this could end up being, you know, for just a few months of Tommy Pham, a pretty strong pickup for the Mets if he continues on this developmental path.
All right. Well, all of that conversation about last year's international signees who got off to good starts to their pro careers is in advance of the 2024 international signing period, which begins on January 15th. We will have full coverage on that day we like to refer to as the day of Jesse Sanchez Day. So definitely be following Jesse on Twitter, and MLB Pipeline will be bringing you all the signings that start coming in, becoming official on that day, again, January 15th. So thanks very much to Ed Casey for setting us up with that question. And that is going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.